lead for ASP.NET.
Yes.
And so let's talk about testing in ASP.NET.
Right. So the ASP.NET test team actually consists of about 23, 25 engineers, broken down to three sub-teams.
Okay.
We have the page framework team. Which owns most of the page framework features, like site navigation, web parts, master pages. We have the controls team, which owns the all the server controls that we ship.
Okay.
Quite a bit of controls that we ship in the box, from grid view to login controls to menu control. So, and then we have the core infrastructure team, which is focused on the core low-level services of ASP.NET, like security, caching, HTTP intrinsics. So this is kind of in general the ASP.NET test team. Talking a little bit about testing ASP.NET, there's anything of any aspect of testing that you can think of probably applied on ASP.NET.
Sure.
It's a development platform, so you can think of a lot of challenges in terms of trying to gather all the scenarios that developers could be using to develop pages. So in addition to our test plans, we actually do a lot of work with customers and bringing in their applications and making sure that we are aware of all the different patterns people are using to develop their pages.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many people out there, there's so many diverse ways people could develop their applications, and we provide a development platform. So that's one of the big challenges we have. The other big challenge is, as a development platform that powers a lot of mission critical applications, we do have heavy emphasis on reliability and security.
Sure.
We have state-of-the-art stress lab that we work on. It's kind of like $1 million lab that we,
sure,
we've equipped with the best machines to kind of try to make sure we have the best mimic of customer scenarios,
sure,
in our lab. In addition to security.
Now, Scott Guthrie said that there was, several thousand security reviews on ASP.NET and IIS?
Yes. There's actually, we just finished about almost 2 months security push where everyone just focused on security. We reviewed every single line of code. We've applied any security tools that you can think of from MSSR and from standard tools in terms of like fault injection, app verifier tools,
mm-hmm,
fuzzing tools that create all kinds of HTTP requests across our controls. So we've tried that. And the dev team kind of reviewed all their code internally, and we've had kind of the security SWAT team kind of get engaged with us and then reviewed our code. So those are two ticket items that we really kind of focus on. They're very important because you don't want your mission critical app, stock trading site to go down, or
sure,
somebody could sneak in,
totally,
and get some information from there. The one specific challenge to ASP.NET in terms of testing, which we're trying to do with the 2.0, is around, we're trying to put a lot of emphasis to make sure accessibility and HTML compliance is taken into account. That has been, for a lot of our customers, very important.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a challenge because we also want to make sure that we're compatible with the old versions that we ship. Especially this is a new version, new major version, so there's a lot of changes that we made. So we want to make sure we're compliant, we're accessible, and we are compatible, compliant, and accessible at the same time. And sometimes those don't work together. Sometimes it's accessible but can't be compliant, and those are the challenges that we've been working through. We spend a lot of time.
So you're probably testing on a lot of different kinds of browsers, like Firefox.
Exactly. And then we do a lot of applying in all our test cases. We do passes where we apply different XHTML compliant doc types, so that we can identify errors in the compliance. Are we emitting a wrong? If we say we're 1.1 compliant, are we emitting something that is not compliant with that markup? So we do a lot of those passes. We also have about probably 1,000 test cases that do only accessibility. If you come to the team and when they were doing accessibility push, you can look at people's screens. You'll see it all, black and white, trying to kind of see if you can reread the pages, or you'll hear the JAW reader.
Okay.
People trying to read the web pages for.
Yeah.
Visually impaired people.
Sure.
So we do a lot of emphasis there. Compatibility is pretty interesting because we try to run our test bed from old versions on new versions,
mm-hmm,
but the biggest challenge is trying to get customer apps in-house, tried to kind of see real applications running. You know, you upgrade it, it's just work.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of challenges, of course, there. We've done dev labs. We've sent people across the country to talk to customers in terms of trying to get their applications to upgrade and see what issues they run into, trying to report those back and fix those bugs.
Fantastic. So 1.1 to 2.0 should be pretty painless.
That's what we're trying.
Excellent.
We're trying our best to make sure it's painless as possible.
Fantastic.
And there's a division at a council that reviews every breaking change
mm-hmm.
that we try to make or we attempt to make sure that...
What's a breaking change when you say that?
A breaking change is like an API change. If it's a public API, we make it private, or we change the naming on it, or we change the parameters you're passing in. So that could potentially mean that a developer is using that API, and then when he upgrades, his app breaks.
Sure.
Of course, there's different variations of it. Sometimes we consider some of the rendering changes are for ASP.NET, some of the rendering changes are breaking changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on the product sometimes in this scenario.
So if you change an interface definition or something,
which
you don't typically want to do.
You definitely don't want to do that. And even if you want to remove an API, there's also an obsolescence process that we go through where for this version we mark it obsolete, so when somebody compiles their application using that API, it gives them a warning. So they can say, and it will tell them which API they should use to replace
their
API.
Excellent.
So they can fix it. And then the next version will rip it out. So there's like at least one version release where they can actually, do their migration slowly so they don't just break.
Cool. Yeah, we're going to migrate Channel 9 to 2.0, so maybe we'll...
Cool. That'd be great.
...send you bugs.
Yeah, and we'll meet also Kashif, who's in charge of compatibility for ASP.NET.
Fantastic.
He will definitely be looking forward to using as many applications
as he can.
As he can.
Great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Cool.
What's the challenge of your job?
Challenge of job is making sure that the customer experience is as great as possible. Make sure we have as many customers happy as possible, and making sure that we find all the critical issues, all the critical scenarios that customer could run into before we ship the product. That's my main job.
Is there any accountability on test teams if a bug gets in the product you didn't catch?
Yeah, it's funny because the test teams always gets blamed for... It traditionally gets blamed for the any bugs that are found, but I feel that quality is accountable to test, PM, and dev. Sometimes it's the design, it's a bad design that causes us to be in that situation, or it's
the other thing that's as you're mentioning, it's pretty much impossible to test every single customer scenario.
Exactly.
Because you don't know exactly what all of the components of a particular set in machine is going to have.
Exactly.
You don't know what applications they have installed on their web servers. You don't know exactly what they're doing.
Right.
So it's very, very difficult. So you're talking about the core functionality.
Yes.
And you cover that very, very well, obviously.
We try to do as much as possible. We try to cover all the common scenarios. And we try to bring in big apps and look at their coding styles and say, here's the customer setting up his pages in this way with those X amount of subdirectories, and this may be something we should incorporate as part of our testing.
Sure.
There's also a lot of exit criteria that is...
Now, what are exit criteria?
Exit criteria are basically a set of requirements that we need to meet before we say we're exiting this milestone. So basically, we say, for example, we want to be 100% compatible. Are you 100% compatible? And here's the metrics to measure it, right? If you're not, then you cannot exit. And if we don't exit, we can't ship, right? So this is kind of like an exit criteria. And there's an exit criteria defined around many areas of testing, like side by side, Are we running, can you run, there's 8 key scenarios that we should be running under. Do you pass all those scenarios? Compatibility, clustering, accessibility, IPv6. There's a lot of exit criteria that we incorporate as part of our testing to make sure that, hey, we didn't forget about something, or, platform coverage is also important, Win2K3, Win2K, all the platforms that we think our customers are going to be using, we're covering. Any platform that we are advertised that we support, of course, we test on. It's a huge matrix.
Absolutely.
So,
I'd love to see some of the threading issues that you run into when you massively stress test ASP.NET, because it handles it very, very well.
Yeah, yeah.
But it'd be fun to check that out.
Yeah, we definitely can show you some of the stress bugs we find. We talk to some of the stress team folks that we...
What's the funnest part of your job? That's a good question.
What's the funnest part of my job?
Yeah.
The funnest job, I think I find the funnest part is when you talk to a customer and he just says, oh, this is really ultra cool, right? And it's you're like, oh, wow, we're doing the right thing as a product.
Sure.
Or when I see a customer running into a scenario that we've identified earlier and we fixed a bug in that scenario, and we said, we want to fix that issue because we think customers run into it. And then I see a customer kind of running through that scenario and say, hey, it works really well. So make him feel good about doing our jobs right. So
excellent.
That's cool.
Very cool. Where does the testing process break down? Why in the past have bugs gotten into products?
It's tough.
And what have the testing teams internally learned from, past experiences?
We've seen a lot of bugs. In my experience at Microsoft, the bugs that test teams usually miss are the ones that are more of an integration scenarios where there's a lot of factors in the scenario that we did not consider. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interactions with we had a bug where in ASP.NET where there were issues with antivirus software that is on the server.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't think about that scenario when we were testing, but
sure.
Customers are hitting it. So those are some of the challenges. That's sometimes where the process breaks down because
mm-hmm.
the matrix is huge. It's infinite number of scenarios. And what you try to do is, through beta programs, early adopters, try to cover as much of the spectrum as possible. But it's always a challenge to make sure you're covering every scenario. That's why we have a QFE process. We have a process where we can provide customers with patches in case they run into issues that we...
QFE stands for?
Quick Fix Engineer.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, somebody runs into an issue, they call PSS.
PSS is?
Product support.
Okay.
Yeah.
got to make sure, because there's a lot of internal Microsoft jargon.
Sure.
But I'm on the outside, I'm like,
And
we use a weird language up here.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, so they call PSS, we have engineers here that kind of look at the issue, they say
mm-hmm.
they see the problem, they provide a patch, we build it, we test it, we go to the customer. And it's automatically incorporated in the next version, so nobody could run into it again. So
now you have to, you have to design as the test team. You design the test matrix.
Yes.
So
yes.
Clearly, you're working closely with Dev.
Yes.
And
yes.
Dev, obviously, they write their own test cases for their implementations.
Yes.
And then you go ahead and write your own.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the interaction between dev and test.
Okay.
Because you're both engineers.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
In all
yeah.
sense, you're both devs.
Right.
Just that one dev does less testing than the
exactly.
other.
Exactly. I mean,
one implements.
Yeah.
And breaks.
Right.
So let's talk about that.
They say for every line of code the dev writes, a test engineer writes 10 lines of code, in counterpart to test it.
Sure.
So. Usually, our test team is involved in the with devs from the initial design process of the feature.
Excellent.
There is a lot of things we think about when the test engineer is involved in that process. Like, is this feature testable?
Mm-hmm.
Can I actually write automation to test it? Is this going to cause a bug farm? Sometimes there's design that we come up with that it's going to take us, it's going to be impossible to test it, and it's very prone to bugs.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to kind of avoid those designs and say, okay, maybe we should revisit the design. Is this feature is not worth doing because we're not going to be able to provide good quality assurance within the time frame that was provided for us. So,
now, are you compensated to find more bugs?
What's that?
Are you compensated based on the number of bugs you find?
We don't really use that for compensation. It's
okay.
Basically a data point that we use in terms of how many bugs are we finding in this feature area, how stable is this feature area.
Right.
There's a lot of factors we find, we put emphasis on in terms of reviews,
mm-hmm.
Like the bug quality, the understanding of the feature, the completeness of the test bed and things like that. So,
okay.
I mean that's really what you're asking, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like as a developer, how do you get reviewed?
Yeah.
Right? You get reviewed for for writing good code, right. Not for, you know, you don't get dinged because you happen to have 100 bugs and some other dev had 60. Yeah. That's not how it works, right? It's the quality of the code you wrote in the sense of the design.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the feature, like, was it something that was really cool and really brought the product to a new level? So, so I'd imagine for you, it's like, wow, we were almost ready to ship, and tester X found this bug where, in these certain circumstances, yeah. ASP.NET would blow up and the CLR would explode.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that would be like, wow, nice job, bro.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes there's a concern that come out of that, like, oh, wow, you know, this is a mainline scenario that we're finding, you know, 2 days before shipping, you know, why did we not find it, right?
Sure.
There's also those questions actually get asked a lot when we go to ask mode, when the division goes into ask mode, and basically we're asking the division to fix every single bug we want to fix in the product,
mm-hmm.
so that it gets enough scrutinization. So they ask us, like, why didn't you find this bug earlier? And what is basically forcing us to do some root cause analysis on the issue so that mm-hmm. it doesn't happen again. And if there are any broken processes within the test process, we can go back and fix them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's not, I wouldn't say, you know, it's based on the number of bugs you find. It's just a data point that we use.
Right.
Give us an understanding of
what I was getting at is you're incented to help out the entire product, mm-hmm. and so you're incented to get bugs out of the product early, not even late. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the earliest we get out of the bugs out of the product, then, you know, the easier the stability of the product is, the better customer feedback we get, because sometimes you give the piece of software to a customer and you have it tested, like, you know, it gives you some feedback, and then if you go back and revamp the whole feature, then the customer feedback sometimes gets invalidated to a certain point.
Yeah. So now, what in your opinion, what makes a great tester? Now, I realize there's different flavors, but
yeah.
for your team?
I think a couple of things. Curiosity. I'm curious to know how this works. What if I do this? What about that? And then attention to detail. I mean, it's like sometimes you run into issues where, like, oh, this is a little weird. Let me investigate a little more, and investigate a little more, and then you find big hole in our coverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think those two key things are very important for testers.
Wait, when you say coverage, what do you mean by that?
Coverage as in breadth of coverage of a product. You know, how much coverage have we tested in terms of testing feature areas.
Okay.
So, but, you know, curiosity and attention to detail. And of course, you know, there's core things as a tester, you know, in terms of coding skills
mm-hmm.
And ability to communicate well are very important on our team.
So, don't just go and yell at a dev, yeah.
That's
not a good idea. But interesting.
Really?
I mean,
yeah.
For people on the outside who don't write software, why is software a process? Why is creating software a process that bugs happen? You know, why can't there be perfect code? Why can't a dev create perfect code without any bugs?
Because we're human, we're not perfect. If we get, I mean, it's an intrinsic probably trait that, you know, we create the software and
mm-hmm.
we're not perfect. So there's always mistakes in the way things work. And with software, there's so many infinite possibilities that, you know, it's impossible to test them all. You know, sometimes they show the graph of, you know, testing over time and the number of bugs and the quality of the product. You know, it's an exponential graph where the bugs go down, 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 but they never really reach zero, regardless of how long you do testing.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, the longer you do testing,
mm-hmm.
The more bugs you find, the more stable the product is, but you'll never reach the point where you can guarantee that there is zero bugs. And there isn't really a process that allows you to guarantee or measure that there are zero bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, there's no this test that you do or this tool that you run in your software and tells you, oh, there are zero bugs in your product.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a matter of being, have a good understanding of the customer segment that this product is targeting,
mm-hmm.
understanding their scenarios, understanding all the different inputs of your piece of software, understanding your dependencies, and make sure you cover those properly.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a lot of feedback from customers is very important. So.
Sure. I mean, it's pretty much impossible to predict how your product's going to be used by every single person on every single configuration of
the system.
Exactly. But there's a core set
uh-huh.
of of functionality and code that we do make relatively bug-free.
Yes.
That is, right, so we can check to make sure we're not leaking memory, right?
Yes.
We can make sure we're not, you know, overriding buffers,
that
kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
And we're getting better at that every day.
Yeah.
When you say bug, on the outside world, I think of blue screen of death as bug, right?
No, no.
But bug can mean everything from a little misspelling.
Yeah, I think of a bug as an error message that doesn't have a period at the end of the message, right? That can be considered a bug, right?
Sure.
Of course, you know, we try our best to make sure that the products are, you know, the best quality you can get, and we spend a lot of, you know, resources and engineer cycles on making sure that we're shipping the right product for the customers. ASP 1011, you know, we've done great work to get it to that quality, and then we're shooting even to get the better quality for 2.0 and better reliability and performance.
Since Microsoft is a people business, really, I mean, we don't have factories here other than maybe a CD burner somewhere.
I don't even know where that is.
But how can schools better prepare students for the art of creating software?
Exactly. So, actually, that's an interesting question. In the when I went through my schooling, for example, there wasn't much emphasis on, you know, the product cycle of software and what it all takes to build the software. The most emphasis was on technology, learning the technology, and how to design the software. But there wasn't anything in there that tells you, yeah, you can do that, but that by itself does not allow you to ship, you know, world-class software or quality stuff for customers to use. Mm-hmm. So I think incorporating some of that material in the curriculum for like computer engineers and computer science programs will prepare our you know, students that graduate in those degrees to have better understanding of what it involves.
Mm-hmm.
I think software testing is probably one of the least visible, least understood areas for our customers, and sometimes for Microsoft engineers that have not been involved in testing. You know, they just they just think that the software just gets written and then somebody does some testing and then it's, oh yeah, we're good to go.
Sure.
But it's huge, you know, process and a lot of effort that goes into it. I'm like some of the candidates that we get from college that do interviews for software testing, you can tell that, you know, they don't have a structured testing approach because they've never been exposed to it. You know, we try to kind of look at more of the core competencies, like, you know, attention to detail, the core smarts of the person, than actually the you know, the structure of the test. Is he covering, you know, stress, performance? And a lot of candidates come in, they never heard of stress testing or, you know, capacity testing. You know, there's some people that never heard of that. You know. So what is stress testing?
What about security? Because I keep hearing that too, talking to kids that they get very little security training, like what, you know, like what we do here now with Michael Howard's program. And
exactly,
stuff.
And I think security is as software, I mean, I think of it as a, you know, as software, as the software industry, you know, grows and gets into everybody's lives, security becomes kind of like becomes more and more critical. And you know, at Microsoft, we're you know, with the Trustworthy Initiative, we're trying to do more education. We're trying to incorporate more heavily in our development cycles, and it is, you know, heavily incorporated now. You know, when you have a security bug, it gets fixed. There's no question about it. There's nobody, even if it was the last day, we're shipping today, security bug gets fixed. We spin the cycle, we do it. There's no questions about it. So that is great for our products, and we're producing much more secure products. But bringing that back, I mean, there's a lot of security is also, it's a way of thinking, and it's also a technology that you can learn in terms of how do I do security testing, what is security testing, what is a buffer overrun, what is, you know, a cross-site scripting attack, what is, an AV that could cause, you know, other functions that could potentially lead to, you know, a denial of service attack, you know. Mm-hmm. Understanding all those issues and how they could happen, educating people about it, when they write their code, they can start understanding, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't do that because it could cause, you know, a denial of service attack or could cause a, you know, cross-site scripting attack.
Sure.
You know, as that gets incorporated, when I develop the code, then I have, you know, less surface area of attacks that could happen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, definitely. Your product is used on the internet, so it's probably a very high visibility.
It is
security target. Right?
It is. Mm-hmm. That's why we take security very, very seriously.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people dependent on us to make sure our product is secure, and it is definitely one of our top priorities as a test team and as a product unit.
Now, ASP.NET has to be used in conjunction with other products to really protect it. You know, I can think of a credit card company or a bank that is using ASP.NET.
Of course.
They have to have, you know, firewalls and other things. So
yes.
You're relying on some other infrastructure to really be part of the solution, right?
Sure, sure. I mean, what we try our best is for our product to be secure by default, of course. I mean, it's also a development platform. I could write an application that is so insecure that, you know, I people type their social security number and it's visible to anybody that visits the sites as, you know, recent transactions. You know, here's the list of transactions, the people's credit card IDs. I mean, it's this. What we try to do is our product is secure by default. Any features we develop, we give mm-hmm. customers that has a lot of built-in functionality is secure by default.
Mm-hmm.
We try to give customers a lot of guidelines in terms of secure coding patterns and samples. Mm-hmm. So we also even do reviews on our samples that we publish.
Sure.
Are they secure? Are we using the most recommended pattern? Are we using the providers? Are we recommending customers to write providers in the most secure pattern? Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of that. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the ecosystem around us is also needs to be secure. You know,
sure.
If there's a bug in Windows, it's going to be hard for us to address it.
Well, I'm thinking more of the attacks are going up to the application level now. You know, so developers have to become much more astute.
Yes.
And the attacks are getting much more sophisticated.
Exactly.
You know, phishing and, you know, my ex-wife had money ripped off because she filled out a form that she thought was from a bank, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. I mean, people are getting more sophisticated. And,
and we're addressing that.
Yeah, we're addressing
attack. It's a hard problem.
Yep.
I mean, that's mental. Right.
Definitely.
That's a different kind of bug.
And, you know, as we address all the issues, more come up, but we need to be very proactive in
mm-hmm.
you know, addressing those. Sometimes you do, like, defense in-depth approaches where you say, right now I can't think of a vulnerability in this piece of code, but you know what, I'm going to change some of the things because mm-hmm. just in case people could think of some scenarios or in case this thing could happen, I've already have, like, you know, a defense deep inside the system that will prevent that attack. So it's, I mean, they're getting more sophisticated. The developer, of course, has to be aware of
mm-hmm.
you know, what he's coding, but we're doing a lot of work to make sure that the features we provide for the developers
mm-hmm.
Allow them to write secure code by default.
Sure.
So if I use my data grid and I just put it on the page, you know what, we're going to protect your view state, we're going to protect the data that we produce ourselves when you put that data grid on the page. So
basically, I mean, you're ensuring that a hacker can't hack the ASP.NET process, that's right?
Of course, yes.
So they can't, that's the real worry. If a developer is going to write an ASP.NET application and share a user's credit card information
right.
and ask
exactly.
them for stuff that's not protected, well, that's nothing that the ASP.NET team can do anything
exactly.
about.
But we definitely, for sure, make sure that ASP.NET out of the box is secure.
Of course.
How do we know until it's been used for 18 months or 24 months?
We have a lot of technology that we use today in terms of our, in terms of, like, we have a process that we go through to make sure that we're as confident as we can in security.
Yeah.
And those checks and bounds that we go through allow us to be confident that the product is secure. In terms of, like, code reviews, in terms of, like, some of the tools that we use to do injection, and a lot of our actually specific test planning that people kind of look at the feature and say, start to think of attacks that we can do. We also do what's called threat models for every
mm-hmm.
feature. So every feature goes through a threat model where the designers sit together of that feature and say, okay, what are all the different attack vectors of that feature, and let me write what are the possible attacks there, and we prioritize them in terms of severity, and we go through and if there are any that could potentially produce an attack, we go ahead and address it. So if you look, you know, we have all the threat vectors for all parts of ASP.NET being reviewed, and
mm-hmm.
in addition to we bring, like, a lot of security experts in house to make sure they review our code, our scenarios.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's different a lot of processes that we go through to make sure our product is secure.
Yep. Fantastic.
So as a bug comes in, mm-hmm. from like on an older product, mm-hmm. you actually write test programs and test methodologies to try to prevent that bug from being built into products in the future.
Of course. Yeah.
So this is how Microsoft learns from.
Exactly.
Itself.
I mean, we do a root cause analysis of all the bugs that we find in products that we ship, not only security but any other product, any mm-hmm. other bugs. So we bring in the bug, we look at it, like, you know, what happened, what are the scenarios we need to cover. We make sure it's fixed in the next release. We do analysis on the bug, if it actually could be exposed in other areas of the product, not only the area that it was reported in, mm-hmm. and we do go covering those holes. Of course, security, we go through a bigger, you know, analysis of our feature set. We make sure that this is not a pattern that could be available or a variant of that attack is available in our product. So we do that review.
Yeah.
So.
Excellent. Well, let's go meet some of these testers.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's go. All
right. Let's start with. Let's see.
So this is Kashif. Talked a little bit about compatibility. Cool. Kashif is the guy that leads our ASP.NET compatibility efforts.
Hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
He's also
nice
the test lead for PageFree.
Kashif. Charles.
Charles and Robert. Hey,
Robert.
How are you doing? So you're in charge of compatibility?
Yeah.
So are you running Firefox on your...
there are three different kinds of compatibility if you look at, you know, browser compatibility, markup compatibility, meaning XHTML compliance and stuff like that, and then there's backward compatibility. So I'm owning backward compatibility.
Ah.
We have other people on the team owning, you know, browser caps.
So you're the sad guy who gets to run Windows 95 or something?
we weren't there with Windows 95, so
yeah.
it's better.
Yeah.
We're working on V11 apps from customers. Like, a lot of times we run into issues where customers use the product in totally unexpected ways, you know, like, and the behavior is not really documented in any way, but it seems to work. And then we make changes in V2, and it breaks customer lab, and then we have to go back and write some hacky code so that it works, and, you know, along with supporting the earlier scenarios. So. And the problem is that, you know, you can test 100 apps, and then the 101st app will come along and prove you're wrong again, that, you know, you're not 100% compatible. So we've got very big goals for compatibility. Like, I think as a division, we're pushing for a very high level of compatibility.
Sure.
Unless until, you know, there are scenarios where we cannot really, there was some security issues or there are some important changes that we want to move customers forward to, you know, like, say, XHTML conformance. In some cases, we might end up breaking customers, and there are no, like, we cannot help that.
Sure.
Customers will need to make certain amount of changes.
But, I mean, theoretically, if I have a 1.1 app, I should be able to compile it against 2.0, and the compiler will tell me whether or not a class is still around or not.
So,
right?
the interesting thing is that, you know, with ASP.NET, it's mostly dynamic compilation, right? So you run your pages, and then you'll find out whether, you know... things are working or not. We will.
If you architected it,
yeah,
that way.
The errors will actually point to failures. But in some cases, the changes are not really, you know, the class is missing or something like that. They are really behavioral changes.
Okay.
You know? So sometimes for customers, it's difficult to diagnose. You know, why doesn't this look the same, or why doesn't, you know, the script doesn't work? Why doesn't it work? Well, so it requires some amount of investigation in terms of, you know, what really changed in our code, which caused the customer to break. But yeah, usually we end up fixing all the issues. Like, even though from a compatibility perspective, you know, even though it might be a priority 3 kind of a issue from a bug perspective, you know, from a product perspective, but it breaks a customer app, we'll still end up fixing it.
Sure.
Know? So any edge scenarios, whatever it might be, if it's compatibility, then...
Customers are always prize
right.
zero.
Prize
compatibility
zero.
Is
exactly.
number one for us.
So it's a huge balance that we're trying to maintain, you know, by supporting, moving towards XHTML kind of a model,
mm-hmm.
And supporting compatibility and supporting accessibility. It's like a real, you know, juggling and making sure that we end up doing the right thing in all the cases for the customers.
Sure.
It's pretty
challenging. It's a lot of work. Very
yeah.
challenging.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, great job,
cool.
man.
Yeah.
Thanks
a lot.
Guys.
Very nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
All right, let's
good
see.
Luck.
Nina and Helen are here. Hello. This is Helen, and this is Nina. They both work on, actually, Nina works on Ching's team, on the controls team, and Helen works on the page framework team. I don't know if you guys want to talk a little bit about you own for ASP.NET.
I own personalization in version 2.0 and async pages.
And
so
when you say personalization, what do you mean?
So it's basically a framework that allows you to persist user or shared customizations on a page.
Okay.
So let's say you want to have like certain web parts throughout the page and like drag and drop into different zones according to what you want. Personalization framework allows you to store that.
Very cool.
To the database. Yeah.
A lot of testing work going on right now.
Yeah.
We're actually in the middle of our ZBB test pass, so there's a lot of
zero bug bounce.
Zero bug bounce. You're right.
Yeah.
We're
what does that mean? What does zero bug bounce mean?
Zero bug bounce. It's
yeah.
basically a point in the schedule where you fix all bugs that are older than 24 hours. Basically, hitting that date gives you confidence in your ship date that you know you're pretty well set in terms of the upcoming schedule. So you try to actually identify all the issues right before that date so they get fixed, and then we reach that point in the schedule, we're like, okay, cool, we're doing really well.
Cool.
It's kind
pretty
like
intense
point.
In there, aren't they?
Yeah.
So we're with Channel 9, by the way, in case you're wondering why I'm walking in your office with the camera. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Right. Good luck to you.
Let them fix the bugs.
This is Erinel.
Hi.
Erinel owns all the
data source controls.
Wow.
Ah.
All the data source controls
we're
building in
2.0. Now, when I used to do the VBITS conferences, the Visual Basic conferences, and the Visual Studio conferences, the data tracks were always the most well attended. So I know you probably have a lot of pressure on you to get it right.
Yeah, and a lot of posts on the forums, and yeah, it's a very loved area.
Yeah. You can't build an application about using data.
What's the coolest thing about data controls in the next version?
The coolest thing?
The coolest thing.
The fact that you can achieve so much with no code. Just clicks in the designer and everything is built behind the screen for you.
Yeah.
I think Scott probably demoed some of those.
Yeah, he did.
Oh,
yeah, it's like totally zero code data grid that binds to back end SQL, and then you do like, you get edit, sorting, paging, all.
Now, as a tester, you probably know the product better than a lot of other people. There's probably very few people even at the company that know the product better than you. Right?
I like to believe that. I like to believe that.
So do you get to go and do talks at TechEd or at PDC, or do they keep you here hidden in the...
It depends how much they need me here.
Yeah.
It depends on how much I'm needed here.
We need internet a lot here.
Well, thanks.
Well, thanks.
Thank
it's an honor
you.
Meeting
Thank
you.
Great job.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
So we have Fede and Jeb. Jeb is our actually new intern. He just started on Monday.
Oh, wow.
All
right.
Cool. And Fede owns all the login controls for ASP.
So you're an internship. You're an intern here?
Yeah, I just started.
So you're here for the summer then, or?
Yeah, for like 10 weeks until the beginning of August.
And are you going to school then, or?
Yeah, we'll be in the fall. I'll be back at school as a senior at Yale.
Yale, wow. That's impressive. They didn't let guys like me in schools like that. So what are you guys working on?
Well, I literally just started, so I'm still sort of in the learning stage, getting my bearings, figuring out what's going on more than doing any new work. Yet, so.
What was the process like getting an internship here?
Fun. Certainly not easy, but it was fun. I started, Microsoft actually comes to Yale campus. So I actually got a phone interview, contacted some people at Yale who sent me to Yale, runs a web page where I sent in a resume. They opened a phone interview, and then they flew me out here earlier in the spring for sort of like a day-long bunch of interviews. And then heard shortly after that that I'd gotten an offer and told them I'd love to come.
So why did you come to Microsoft? Why not go to somewhere else?
I just heard, I have buddies, I do computer science at Yale, and I had buddies that had come and done internships here, and they talked about that they just had a really good time and did did actual work versus like making copies and getting copies. Like, that sounded really attractive.
Experience real work here.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's a little bit of an aside. But, so what are you working on? I'm sorry.
So I own Wally controls. Yeah. All seven of them. And
which kind of controls, sorry?
Login controls.
Oh, login controls.
So
wow, that's not a control that anybody uses, right?
So in V2O, we built a new stack of login controls that, you know, you drag and drop, you can get membership with login.
Sure.
So I think we think most people will probably will use those controls to build up their login logic. So
are you doing tests to make sure that the data from the passwords, for instance, are secure, so when you're logging on at Starbucks, that
that's part of the testing, yes. Yeah. I would say priority zero, yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, if your site doesn't log in, you know, we're working on it here, so make sure this works.
Well, thank you.
And this is going to be done without the use of a database backend.
This is what?
This, the login control can be used without having to have a database. For example, on Channel 9, we have a custom login solution where we're storing hashed passwords in a database, blah, blah, blah. With what you guys have built, it's just basically drag and drop, fill in some properties, and that's good to go as a developer?
That is correct. You can either use the database that we can create,
sure,
a membership database that has all the tables for storing users, or you can basically plug login controls to talk to any other kind of storage.
Excellent.
Be it XML, your own database, text file.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Cool.
All right. Thanks.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
This is John. John owns the tree view control.
How's it going?
You have a tree view control now in ASP.NET 2.
Yep.
So,
is this Channel 9, like TBS?
Oh, yeah. Microsoft Public Television.
Careful what you say.
There you go. So the first time you said that, that's what I thought it was.
So you got a nice setup here. How come devs and testers always like living in the dark, you know?
It's not dark.
For us, the lights are evil.
Yeah, you're another one. You never like lights
either.
They're
evil, man. Yeah. They're evil.
So,
bad for the complexity.
What's cool about the tree view control?
There's client-side population, so you can tie it to a database, and you don't have to push the page back every time to get data from the database. It can just inline kind of push the data in.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of cutting edge.
So you're using XML, HTTP?
Our own implementation of that, yeah. We call it callbacks.
Callbacks.
So we can actually call back without actually posting back.
So is this like Ajax technology? It sounds a little bit like...
Actually, we were there before Ajax, so
yeah.
You can call it what you like, but it's all XML over HTTP. So
yeah, Ajax is just a marketing term for all sorts of little technologies we developed here.
Sure.
For Outlook Web Access, for instance, or what else used the that kind of technology? Oh, XML team.
But we created XML HTTP on the IE team.
Yeah, talk about things out on the blog.
Do you have a tree root control running anywhere?
Sure.
Can we check it out?
Actually, I wasn't working on that right this time.
Oh, that's fine. Plus, your monitors are probably not 60 hertz.
Yeah, I'm getting flicker on them.
That's the case.
I'm getting flicker. We'll see you later. Scott's going to give us a good demo of everything.
That's cool.
Very cool. Thank you very much.
Technology to, you know, to build your own.
Thank you. Thanks for stopping by.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are putting in a lot of really cool features in 2.0.
Yeah, it's a lot of new features. It's going to be an amazing product.
Ching is not here. Ching is the lead for the vision controls team. She also owns compilation. So it's pretty much run down of our team.
Right on.
Well, thanks for the little tour. And
hopefully next time we'll talk a little more about it.
Well, so what are we going to talk about next time?
So we'll talk a little bit about the more in details about what areas we test for ASP.NET in terms of, you know, compatibility. We'll dig more into it, the accessibility. I mean, we talked a lot about it. We'll give you guys some tips.
High level. Let's go deep into it.
Yeah.
Can we'll see some demos of the automated test tools
course,
you guys
use? We'll do that too. We'll give you guys a demo of some of our tools.
And going to the lab, maybe?
We'll do the lab, for sure.
Cool.
It'll be fun looking at the stress machines running. That was always a cool experience.
Sure. So, definitely.
Cool. Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
All right. Take care.
Take care.